Roll 2d6, episode 18. Welcome to Roll 2d6, with Adam and Nate, a podcast about games, gaming, and gamers.
Hi everyone, and welcome to another fantastic episode of Roll 2d6. I'm Adam.
And I'm Nate.
And we're here to tell you all about the games that we saw...
And played
at KublaCon 2007, which took place over Memorial Day weekend, back near the end of May.
Yeah.
We both had a great time, and I played a ton of new games that I've never played before, which we are now going to go over.
Yes.
But first, a bit of feedback on the last episode.
Yeah, boy, let me tell you, this is the last time we talk about a game that anyone actually plays anymore. Seriously.
Stick to the out-of-print games from now on.
That's right. We got so much great feedback on the Roll2D6.com comments section of that particular podcast, and I even wrote up something that I was going to put in a nice response to it, but I thought I would just give you the high-level response rather than... Because really, I shouldn't be putting out there the stuff that I typed up, because I was a little hot-headed, and so now I've calmed down.
Well, I appreciate you saving that for the podcast.
I did. I'm saving it for the podcast. No, a couple different things. One, and I don't want to talk too much about the episode, but one, I totally screwed up about the equipment on the hero level campaign.
Ah.
Yeah, so me, total screw-up, mea culpa, went from memory of a game book that I sold about 15 years ago, okay? So my part, total cock-up. I don't know what more I can say.
Second,
I called the name of the game company L. Talsorian, and it's R. Talsorian. I blame a miniature stroke. I had a minor stroke in the language center of my brain.
Mixing up the L's and R's again.
Mixed up the L's and R's. It was very nice, and so mini stroke. The last one is someone brought up in the comments variable power pools as a way to model difficult-to-model powers, or very, sort of varied powers, like Doctor Strange or Spidey using his web in a thousand different ways. And just the long and the short of it is, I know about variable power pools, and I didn't say that they weren't there. I just said that they... I didn't mention them explicitly, but I did say that modeling powers like that was very difficult. First of all, gosh, I'm even getting too far in that I want to. but without going any farther than that, variable power pools, unless you have both a player and a GM that can make up powers on the spot, you end up making a pre-generated list of powers and okaying them with the GM, in which case, what's the difference between that and a multi-pool, which is a list of pre-generated powers that's okayed by the GM out of the power pool cost?
So you did know about that, but you elected to leave it out in terms of time or something?
Yes, it was not only time, but complexity. And which is pretty much one of the main complaints about the hero system in general, is that it's way too complex. There's too many things. I don't necessarily agree with that, but in the interest of the podcast, I didn't want to go into individual specific sorts of power allocations for champions, which a variable power pool would have been.
All right.
So.
And I know that you could have.
I could have. I told you I could have gone for 2-3 hours.
We're here doing a podcast 2 of a series of 7 about the hero system from Nathan.
That's right.
No.
Yeah. And so, I mean, there's lots of other little individual feedback I thought about posting. But in general, I'm just going to say all you guys that wrote back and commented are awesome. Thanks for taking the time to leave the comments on the subject matter in the show. Thanks for the corrections and the comments and, well, the old school schooling that I got. So
that's right. And that also applies to what I'm going to be talking about in these games that from KublaCon. I went through a lot of games, and I'm sure some of them were not explained to me as well as I would have liked. So if I get something wrong, please, by all means, send me some corrections.
Yeah, send corrections. Do it nicely. And if you send the corrections written on the back of a $20 bill, that couldn't hurt.
All right. Thank you. Guy that said that.
Click and clack the tap of brush.
Oh, that's right.
Car talk.
All right.
Who do I think I am?
We should get some recordings of ourselves laughing and play that in the background.
Oh, jeez.
All right. Well, anyway.
All right. On to KublaCon.
On to KublaCon, which is what I was doing that Friday morning. I was able to attend KublaCon all 4 days this year, which
awesome.
I'd like to do. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and half day Monday. So I'm going to go through all the games in the order that I played them, and I'm going to try to go kind of fast so that this doesn't end up to be 2 hours long.
Or a 4 day long podcast to go through the blow by blow of every game.
Sorry, it's a real time podcast. It's going to take just as long as the con did.
Sit back, get a nice frosty beverage.
You're going to hear me talking about what I ate for dinner.
Oh, man.
Okay, no. But I'm also going to say, yeah, as I said, I only got the briefest of introductions to some of these games, and some of the people running them were, you know, as nice as they are, were not all that great at explaining the rules of some of these games.
Right.
So if I get something wrong, please let me know.
Yes.
Anyway, let's see. The first game I played on Friday, this is the usual game that they run while waiting for a registration to open. There's a lot of people milling around, waiting for them to get their computers up and everything. So someone usually sets up Giant Formula Day.
I love Giant Formula Day.
And as I understand,
it's like Formula Day, but huge.
But big. And as we've said in previous podcasts, any game, make it big, it becomes that much better.
That's right. In proportion to its bigosity.
That's right. I can't wait for the Formula Day played with full-size cars out in a big parking lot.
Oh, I would play.
So they take the Formula Day board, they blow up a giant version of it, and it takes up a whole convention table, and they have little micro machines for the cars, and you run around and play, and it's great. So this was the first game I played last year,
yes,
and first game I played this year. Now last year was the first time I'd ever played it, and let me go a little bit briefly about this game. You race your cars around a track. This is sort of like Formula One racing.
Right.
And for each, you start out in... with your car stopped, and you go to first gear, and each turn you can go up or down one gear. Right. You can actually go down two gears, or down two gears, but you take some brake damage.
Right.
In the first gear, you roll a four-sided die to see how many spaces you move. In second gear, it's a six-sided die. Third gear is a D8, and so on until you get to sixth gear, which is a big old D30.
Wow.
But these are not standard dice. They are special Formula Day dice, and they have numbers repeated on them. So
see, this is the thing that screwed me up last year when I played Formula Day, as I saw the 8, and I'm like, oh, great, I've got a 1 to 8 spread on there.
Yeah.
And it's not a 1 to 8. They are not standard. They have repeats of numbers. And
it is the 8-sided die, for example, has 5 to 8 repeated twice. And this is so to guarantee that someone in third gear is going to go faster than someone in first gear.
Right.
And the guy in first gear who's rolling a four-sided die always is a 1 or a 2.
It took me half the game to notice that. And so I was like, why am I rolling so high? And it was...
why is everyone getting so lucky on these rolls?
That's right.
These 20-sided die rolls are always in the upper half.
That's right.
But yeah, so when you roll a D20, you're always going to get 11 to 20. The other interesting mechanic about this is that there are sharp turns on the course, like any exciting racetrack should have.
Absolutely.
And you have to end a certain number of turns inside each of these turn zones. So there's one turn curves, which are really short, and some are 2 or 3 turn curves, have a little chicane or something.
Right.
And so the game is really all about managing what gear you're in, speeding up at the right time on the straightaways, slowing down at the right time for the turns, and I suppose that is much like what real auto racing is like. You know, I'm not an auto racing fan, but seems to me like that's
what
it would be all about.
Right. I don't think there are any automatic Formula Day racers where the transmission takes care of all the shifting for you.
This year, the game I played, there were only 6 players, as opposed to about 12 or 16 last year.
I know, we had a full every position was full when we played
last year. I know, and
year.
So last year, there was humongous pile-ups and blockages on the track, and it was just, if you were not in the front of the pack, it was just a giant pain, and you were scraping body paint with other cars. This year, it was so much open and so much more easy to go around the track. And I came in 5th out of 6 cars.
Well, I think that matches your driving skill normally too. So
and you know, and I would have come in 6th out of 6th, but the guy who was right in front of me as I was coming back
blew a tire.
He blew a tire and spun out, came down to 0 speed, and I passed him and came in 5th place, and he was last.
A victory by default. It's the sweetest kind of victory.
That's right. And so, of course, just like last year, I was still feeling the Car Wars urge to get some weapons mounted on these cars.
Nice oil slick.
Nice dropped weapons, get a little machine gun on there.
Do you like a good machine gun?
I enjoy a good machine gun, nicely oiled machine gun.
That's right.
Let's see. So,
then you checked in because you know while you're waiting to check in, that's what you're playing is Formula Day.
I did. Formula Day was the registration opened about halfway through. The game ended. I went and checked in, got my badge, And then I went and got my schedule, and I was looking around for more stuff. Next thing I went to play were a couple of demo games of the Axis and Allies collectible miniatures game.
Oh, I can't tell you how jealous this makes me. Because I've wanted to play those, but I haven't wanted to actually buy the rules or any of the collectible miniatures.
And these con demos are great for playing things that you don't want to buy.
Yes.
Or at least you want to play it before you buy
it. I want to try before I buy.
Exactly. So now listeners to our previous episodes know how we feel about collectible games, be they CCGs or CMGs.
I think that can be summed up with the word boo.
I wanted to play this since, I don't have to buy anything.
And,
so.
And to be fair, some people really like collectible games. And
some people do.
And they really go into it. And we just happen to be a pair of people that like.
Yes. Aren't. More power to you if you enjoy the collectible aspect of the game. It's not for me.
Yes.
But that being said, we talk about the game qua game here without the
game qua game. Love that.
Without the collectibility aspect.
You get double points if you work vis-a-vis in there somewhere, too.
I'll put that on my list here.
Okay.
The first Axis and Allies game that I played was the naval version of the game, which is called Axis and Allies Naval Miniatures, War at Sea.
You know, this game almost made me wet myself when I saw it in the store.
It was. It is very cool.
It is really cool. I love the miniatures. They were awesome looking.
Really cool little, aircraft carriers, battleships, destroyers, little tiny submarines, little PT boats on a little thing with two PT boats together.
Yes.
And then also aircraft fighters, bombers, and fighter bombers.
Yeah.
And there was a guy there running the demo. He had a big tackle box, of course, filled with hundreds of these very nice little resin miniatures. And the game, as it was demonstrated to me, is played on a hex grid. Now, this was not a real hex grid with hexagons. It was a square hex grid with squares where each alternating row was half offset from the previous square.
That's weird.
It is weird. It's still a hex grid, and I don't know. Maybe they just wanted to scare people away from...
That's freaky strange. All right.
It's one of those fake hex grids, but
whatever.
It was a hex grid. And the two opposing forces enter on opposite sides of the map, and the goal in this game that we played is to reach three objective squares that are in the middle of the map, and if you end your turn with one of your ships on an objective and no one else is in that square, then you win that objective, and whoever gets 100
two
points...
Two out of three objectives.
Two out of three objectives. Or it's 100 points is what we were playing to. The objectives were worth 50 points... And shooting down, destroying other ships was worth the amount of points that the ship was worth.
Okay.
So you could get two, or you could get one and sink some enemy ships.
Hey. You've got to sink some enemy ships.
If you're playing Axis and Allies Naval Miniatures.
It's not a war game without war happening. If it's just a race game, you may as well be playing some other race, like Formula Day.
And it is a pretty simple game. The movement is very simple. The ships move two hexes each turn, and it becomes kind of like rolling initiative and playing kind of like checkers is what some people explain it as.
Yes.
Movement was not that exciting, but the battle rules were neat. The combat is pretty simple and fast. And the game we played, not really a balanced game. It was just sort of some random ships that the game organizer handed to us just so we could learn the game and see what it was about.
Reach into the tackle box, pull out a handful, hand it to you. You're these guys.
That's right. And so I had a carrier, a U.S. carrier, and a couple of cruisers and destroyer and some planes. The other guy had
a large mech. I don't know how that got in there.
he was on land. He was my reinforcements.
Oh, God.
And the other guy had a Japanese battleship and another Japanese slightly lesser battleship, I think. And so the whole game, most ships, I think, can fire two hexes away. Maybe I'm probably getting this wrong, but most ships can only fire like two hexes away. He had battleships that could fire three hexes away was their special ability. So the whole game was him staying just out of range of my guns while I try to...
pounding on you.
And I was sending out my planes, trying to shoot him, and he eventually shot down my planes. But it is pretty cool. There's all these really cool-looking ships, and a lot of people are wanting to use these ships to play other World War II naval combat games, and
absolutely.
I don't blame them. They are lovely miniatures.
They are. They look great.
Let's see. The game moves very very quickly. Let's see. One of the things I read on Board Game Geek, because I was doing some research about this... one guy was saying, you know, if you're wanting to act out or reenact historical World War II battles, you shouldn't think of this as a collectible game. Think of it more as an expandable game.
Oh.
Because there's all these websites out there that sell individual miniatures. You can just go and buy whichever ones you want. And you only need one battleship Yamato,
right.
One USS Iowa or whatever. I'm hope that's the name of an actual ship.
I'm sure there's a ship named Iowa. I don't know if it was around in World War II, but
and you know you need
something Wikipedia.
You need tons of little interchangeable destroyers and PT boats and things, and those are really cheap commons, and you only need one of the big battleships.
That's true.
And so his view was, you know, think of it as that way. You buy just what you need.
Right. He must get free shipping from these places, because once you've already paid for the shipping on a single individual super light little piece, you may as well have, you know, once you do four of those, you may as well have bought a pack of four.
Yeah,
but,
I know.
But you get exactly what you want, and maybe that's worth it right there.
And I think it's something like $300 to get the whole set. So if you've got the money for it, you know, more power to you.
I love me some ships, but $300?
But that's only the whole set if you just want to do smaller things.
I'm a completist.
Anyway, and I'm not, you know, World War II buff, and if it were me, I would just be playing, you know, hey, let's see what would happen if this Japanese battleship was on the same side as the Americans, and they were fighting the Germans.
You're just as happy throwing together the random bucket of crap.
I am.
Fight against the other random bucket of crap. That's cool.
it's an alternate history.
That's right.
Let's see. The next game I played after the naval one was the original Axis and Allies miniatures game, which is Ground Forces.
So it's Axis and Allies-a-thon for you.
It was. Well, at least for the few hours I played this.
Right.
And so this was also uses a hex grid, and this time it's a map with towns, forests, roads, and things like that. And you move individual soldiers and tanks and mortars and artillery and other ground units around.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to achieve the objective of whatever scenario you're playing. And depends on the guy who was running this. I turned out to be the only one playing this with him. He had designed his own scenario where there was a town with Japanese forces that were defending it, and I had some Allied forces that were coming in trying to take the town.
Right.
And he had tried to balance the units and make it an interesting scenario.
Okay, so this wasn't the random have a bunch of guys fight. This guy
no.
actually tried to come up with a scenario with balance
he did.
Things. Well, I applaud him.
Yes, and it was good. It was fun. He had a town with these guys that were dug in, and then he had a sniper up on a hill outside the town.
Very nice.
And I had some guys coming in from the side. I had a couple of tanks, and there's also air units in this. You can have a airplane. You call in some airstrike against the enemy units, and they can try to shoot down the plane from the ground, things like that.
Fun.
And just like the other game, each and every unit or type of unit has a card describing its capabilities, its attack value. Each one usually has a special ability of some kind, like, for example, I had a commander unit that gave units near him a bonus to fire because they're inspired by his commanderness.
Mm-hmm.
And the combat moves really quickly. It becomes pretty clear what your units are capable of and what advantages they have. So it looked like a fascinating game to play, and I would love to play a lot of this. It's just too bad, again, that it's collectible.
We have to wait until it goes out of style again and
right.
then just buy everything cheap.
I need to.
It's kind of like what I did with HeroClix. I walked in and bought a bucket of commons and just said, I'm just going to play with the thugs.
I need to send an email to myself 10 years from now and buy them all on eBay.
Remember to look on eBay.
Send them back in time.
There you go.
but the miniatures are great. Particularly, I love all the little different tanks. They're really cool,
and
I would love to use those.
You got swag from this game, though.
Yes,
didn't you?
I was the only one there, and so the guy who ran, he was a very nice guy and was good at explaining the rules of the game. And to thank me for playing, he gave me a booster box of Axis and Allies Set 2, which I have right here, and it's kind of cool. We were looking at these, and they have some various little tanks and artillery units, and they're all nicely encased in
nice
plastic here.
You know, sadly, they're not in scale with each other, and that's a little bit distressing to me, but
they are not in scale with each other. There's some guys that are bigger than they would not fit in the tanks that they're in and stuff like that.
That's
these are
right.
just representational, because
so
you're
you
moving
still
them
have
on
them all
the
in the plastic, because you're going to eBay them all.
I have not yet there. Taken them out of the okay. plastic, yes.
Well, that's all right.
But if you want to do a battle between...
You know, don't take them out of the plastic while I'm around. I'll get my grubby fingers all over them. Might start drooling on them.
But if you want to do a battle between one American artillery unit and one German tank, we can do that.
All right.
Right here.
And one Japanese lieutenant and
a
Nazi foot soldier, and we're ready to go.
So, let's do a game with 9 random miniatures here.
There
okay.
you go.
So after, after that, the last game I played Friday night was the usual game of Thunder and Guns.
Thunder and Guns!
And I think we talked about this in one of our previous podcasts, but
yes,
this is a pretty old game. It's one of my favorite light games to end a day of gaming with. And the guy who, I've played this played this game at KublaCon every year now for 3 years.
Yeah.
And the guy who runs it, his name is Felipe Morales. He always makes it a lot of fun. He has a giant-sized board.
Yes. And he has great painted minis that go with it.
He has these great, Wild West minis from Foundry Miniatures, I think.
I love the little bags of gold he's put together.
He has little
bags of...
little bags of gold, because the goal of the outlaw in this game is to collect 20 bags of gold, and
right.
So you're going around trying to get them. So this time I was not the sheriff, I was not the outlaw, I was one of the local gunmen named Slim, trying to make a name for myself.
There you go.
And in this game, let's see, I'll tell you something funny that happened during the game. During,
all right.
In the game of Thunder and Guns, one of the attributes your gunman has is his fame level, which
right.
starts out at, I think, 2, and it can increase throughout the game as you win gunfights.
Right.
And as you lose gunfights, it goes down. The higher your fame, the easier it is to recruit the local town people into your gang, and
right.
the bigger your gang, the more likely you are to be able to take out everyone else and be the winning gunman.
Okay.
But if you get into a gunfight and lose, your fame goes down. It becomes harder to recruit people. So, you know, when this happens, we're joking around that people are actually forgetting about you.
Wasn't he shot just down the street yesterday?
That's right. Didn't he die in a grease fire? Who's that guy?
Who are you?
So, yeah, that was kind of funny.
Funny.
And in this game, I did manage to recruit a couple people to my gang, but as usual, my gang was eventually shot down by the sheriff. The sheriff did eventually get killed, though, as well as the outlaw, and one of the other gunmen ended up winning, which I think usually the sheriff wins this game, so that was a good result.
It sort of waited to the sheriff, if the sheriff can just hold out long enough.
Yes, the sheriff gains fame automatically every turn, and if he gets to a fame of 12, he automatically wins, so the
right.
other guys have to move very fast.
Yes.
And the winner of the game was actually a Roll 2D6 listener.
Hey!
He had heard about the game from our very podcast, so he introduced himself to me after the game, so I should give a shout-out to Bay. Thanks for listening, and thanks for giving the game a try.
Hey, Bay, good job.
And just goes to show, you listen to Roll 2D6, and you will guarantee that you will win the next game you play.
Yes, either that or the next out-of-print old game that's been resurrected at a con for people. Game
that's
that you
right.
play.
By the way, that guarantee is void.
Not a guarantee.
Void within the gravitational field of the Earth.
That's right.
All right, so that was Friday. next on Saturday.
It's a hell of a disadvantage for that particular guarantee, by the way.
Well, you know, we have to put that disclaimer in. We don't want to get people suing us there.
That's right. Void or prohibited.
If you're out in the vacuum of space, hey, go for it.
Go for it.
If you're outside
win
of the
your
Earth.
Game in the vacuum of space outside the gravitational pull of the Earth. All right.
So that was Friday.
Yes.
Next day, on Saturday, I got up early and came up and started out with a game of Federation Commander.
That's such a fun game.
This is a fun game. Now, I don't want to go into too much detail on this because I think we're going to talk about it way more extensively in a future podcast.
Absolutely. I've already started putting together notes for our Federation Commander episode.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be good. But,
so there we go. We're foreshadowing. People can people can stay on pins and needles waiting to hear about the full Federation Commander episode.
I'm sure they're quivering with anticipation. But I'll briefly
I
say...
I hope that's anticipation.
It is a... this is a newish game. I think it just came out last year. It's from the same company that makes Starfleet Battles, which is now Amarillo Publishing.
That would be them, I think.
It's intended to be sort of a stripped-down and simplified Starfleet Battles, which is meant to speed up the game vastly and introduce it to new players. And I had played this game a few times before with you, Nate.
Yes.
And I was teamed up in the game at KublaCon with... I was on the Klingon side with a guy who was a veteran Starfleet Battles player. He had never played Federation Commander before, wanted to see what it was about.
He was slumming it down in the simplified version of his normal game.
Yes, and on the Federation side were two other ships manned by players who were completely new to the game. And
it's
we,
a good thing they got Federation.
They have those nice photon torpedoes.
Yes, they do.
On the Klingon side, I think we acquitted ourselves pretty well, and we did not get to finish the game in the time allotted, but it was sort of a learning game, and everyone enjoyed it. And strangely enough, I think that the veteran Starfleet Battles player was nearly as handicapped as the new players. You know, he kept going, what, you don't have to pre-plan your energy expenditure? You don't have to do this? You don't have to... You know, he was just amazed by how simplified it was.
That's
and,
right.
He did seem to like it.
He did seem to like it. It was sort of a breath of fresh air. He no longer had to do all four columns of accounting in order to fire his torpedoes. He could
do
a basic set of mathematics to do that, of arithmetic.
So we played through a few turns of the game and shot at each other and got to see how the damage allocation and everything works. And at the end of the game, which I think was 3 hours, he did grudgingly admit that if we'd been playing Starfleet Battles, we would still would have been on the first turn
That's
of the
right.
game.
That's right, the energy allocation turn of the first... No, but yeah, the first turn of the game, wow.
But, so anyway, we'll go into more detail on Federation Commander in a future podcast.
Yes, a worthy subject, worthy of its entire an entire episode.
Oh, yes, very very good game, and not to... Don't want to offend any of the Starfleet Battles players out there.
We love you guys, too. Both
but,
of you. No,
Federation Commander. Great game. Yes. So after that was my second Old West-themed game of the con.
All right.
And this was Legends of the Old West. And this is a game from Games Workshop, based on, I believe, the Warhammer historical system. This game was a ton of fun, and I would be lying if I didn't say that part of my fun here was due to the beautiful, gigantic tabletop terrain that was brought in by the guys from Gamescape up in San Rafael. And they had a really nice terrain, like Old West deserty terrain. They had cacti, they had a fence going across, they had buildings you could go in and you take the roof off and you could walk around inside the buildings.
I love those, yeah.
They had little tumbleweeds and you could
little tumbleweeds?
You could blow on the board and the tumbleweeds would blow across.
Oh, man.
It was great. So this is a miniatures game from Games Workshop. It's a pretty simple movement and combat system, very quickly and easily grasped by all of us who had never played it.
Yes.
We had six players in our game, the two sides of three, and each player was controlling a posse of five or six characters.
All right.
Now, I don't play...
Squad level, more or less.
Squad level, skirmish level.
Skirmish
yes.
level.
Now, I don't play a whole lot of miniatures games, but apparently they were telling us this game is very similar to the Lord of the Rings game.
All right.
And it's about the complexity of that game, or about of Blood Bowl.
Okay.
You have to have miniatures, and you have to have a terrain to play on for this
you
game.
You don't want people playing on the infinite void of your dining room table.
Well, you could just play on a featureless plane, but it would not be nearly as exciting.
Right.
And, you know, I suppose you could play with cardboard stand-ups or something if you really don't want to give Games Workshop any money or spend time painting miniatures, you know. But, you know, it's so much more fun if you do have the really nice little cowboys.
Yeah.
And these Gamescape guys, they had six full posses of very nice Foundry Old West miniatures, and they looked really great. I had a group of Indians, and there were some lawmen that were controlled by the other players on my side. We were trying to take out Kit Carson and a bunch of mountain men on the other side.
You know, those miniatures by the Foundry look great.
They do.
By the way, I went to that site after you told me about those. I went to look at them, and I was just inspired to want to paint miniatures again, or at least buy painted miniatures from the Foundry.
That's right. And, you know, and in fact, after KublaCon, I went to the game store and... bought some miniatures and some paints, which I haven't done for like 10 years. It makes made me want to paint miniatures again.
Yeah.
Anyway, the whole game was very evocative, and they even had an old-timey deck of playing cards, which we drew from to see who had initiative each turn, and it was great.
That was very theme heavy.
It was very, very thematic, and those guys, and in fact, it was not, it's not initiative that you get each turn, it's the drop. You get the drop.
Oh, you get the drop. Oh, that's great.
And so you do your movement, and then you do your shooting, and then you do your hand-to-hand each turn, and the hero characters, each squad of five or six, you had one guy who was your hero, and the others were sort of like little grunts, and the hero had a hero ability, and you could use your hero ability to move out of turn. So if the other team got the drop on you, your hero could do a yee-haw or something, whatever it's called, and you could then move first that turn instead of moving second, or you could shoot first instead of shooting second.
That's cool. Nice and cinematic, like an Old West movie.
That's right. So, that was really fun. And the stats for the characters, you have your shooting skill, you have your fighting, and then you also have grit.
Yes,
and you have your guts.
You mean that magazine they tried to have kids sell back in the 70s, door to door?
That's right.
You
had
magazine
you
Grit.
Had Grit magazine. Did anyone ever actually buy that, or did you just look at the ads
just
in the back
at
of
the
Boys
ads.
Life?
And I wondered what the magazine could possibly be about. Was it Sandpaper Quarterly? Was it about hominy grits? I had no idea. There was no way to tell.
I had a subscription to Sandpaper Enthusiast, but that was just me. I preferred their more technical treatment of the subject.
Yeah, I was fond of Sandpaper Fancy, where they have sandpaper sort of in people's shoes, doing cute poses, things like that. But yeah, grit magazine.
Yeah.
Where were we at? We were talking.
So when your character gets shot, you make a grit save to see if you survive the shot. It was great.
That is great.
And then there was some other stat, and I was going to look it up before this. I forgot to. But there was another stat, which was when you get shot at, you had to roll to see whether you involuntarily ducked and hit the dirt.
Oh, okay.
And then you had to see if you can get up and move around.
Something
anyway,
like a guts skill or something like that.
Might have been guts,
like
yeah.
Who knows?
Anyway, that was a fun game. I liked that.
Great.
Let's see. Next, I want to talk about Hero Card.
Hero Card from Table Star Games, LLC.
Yes. He's looking at the Hero Card box right
here
on my table.
You didn't have to tell everybody. I was looking at the box.
Nate knew that out of the top
of
his head. He's done
a
lot of research here. So Hero Card is a new game system that I had not heard about until I saw it there in the vendor room, and I got a demo of it from some of their demo people, and I liked it so much I ended up buying two of their Hero Card games.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, they were doing these demos the whole time, and they were giving away demo decks.
Yes, they had a little demo deck they called the Legacy Deck, which was a special type of Hero Deck meant to sort of
a bunch of old
the
cards
game.
They needed to get rid of.
It could be, I don't know. But it's an interesting set of games. So they have all these games, and I think there's five or six of them now. They are very different games with different things you're trying to achieve, and some are battling games, some are set collecting games, some are like an Euro game type area control game.
Right.
But they all use the same conflict resolution system.
Oh.
So each player controls a hero or a character of some type, and you draw a hand of cards from your hero deck, like seven cards, and you're playing attacks against the other player, and they have to play blocks to block it. And this happens in any game. When you're trying to do something, the other guy wants to stop you, you play it out with these cards, and it sort of becomes sort of like a mini CCG in that respect, where I'm playing attacks, you're playing blocks, I'm playing interrupts, I'm playing special cards that do things.
Right, to somehow achieve whatever objective you're doing for the game, regardless of what kind of game it actually is. That's just the resolution system, is that card system, that give and take. But again, these games have, some of them have whole boards with different pieces, some of them have, you know, tile built boards, and they're all a little bit different, and yet they have this common thread running through them.
Yeah, it's interesting. And so the hero in each game, you have a deck of cards, and it's not collectible, but you have a deck of 30 cards for each hero, and you can interchange these heroes in any game. So it's kind of interesting. So I bought two of these games. I bought, one of them was called Champion of New Olympia, and this is a game about superheroes battling to be the superhero who protects this city. And then another one called Rise of the Shogun, which is about various Japanese
ninjas.
Characters,
ninjas.
Samurais, and trying to become, you know, the emperor.
Right.
And that's more of a Euro game type game, I think.
Yeah, that one is more of an area control. I don't know, kind of a little harder to explain. Not the same thing as the Champions of New Olympia, and yet after learning one of them, I was able to pick up the other one almost immediately.
Oh yeah,
because the resolutions, I shouldn't say combat, but the resolution, the conflict resolution system is the same.
And you can even interchange these hero decks. So I can now take my superhero hero deck and move it in, and now he can battle against the ninja in Rise of the Shogun.
Right.
And it all works out just the same. So it's very interesting. And they have another one called Nightmare, which is sort of a horror-themed game. There's one called Galaxy, which is a set collecting game, and there's one called
there's a cyberpunk one, isn't it?
There's a cyber one called Cyberspace, I believe. Yeah, but it's interesting, and you get one of these. The way they sell it is the game itself has two heroes in it, so you can have a two-player game.
So you buy the box set, and it has two heroes for a two-player game.
And then when you want to extend it to three players, you buy a little expansion hero deck, and then you buy four players, you get another expansion hero deck. And they had a special going there where you could get the base game and each of the two expansions for a lower price, so I got all those.
That's mighty kind of them.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. So I now have eight hero decks.
Wow.
Four superheroes and four Asian ninja-type characters.
Awesome.
Anyway, so it's an interesting system, and I think we may end up doing a podcast on this at a future date. That's sort of.
I'd love to. I mean, I played these with you. You brought them back from the con, and I had a really good time playing them. I especially liked Rise of the Shogun. As much as I love superheroes, I thought the superhero one was an inferior game to Rise of the Shogun.
No, I agree. It's not nearly as complex as Rise of the Shogun.
Yeah.
But we now have those extra heroes, and you can throw them into Rise of the Shogun.
Now, you did a tournament for
yes, I did.
For the Hero Card system.
That was
you?
The next day. I did a tournament in Rise of the Shogun in order to promote it. A lot of these game companies will do a little mini tournament there. So I did a tournament, and it was I got to the last round of the tournament, and I was playing with in a four-player game at the end. And the big prize for the tournament was this gigantic metal sword.
A sword?
And it was a real sword. It was not sharp.
It wasn't imaginary.
No, it was a real, like,
physical instantiation.
20-pound metal sword that I lifted up. It was taller than I am.
Wow.
And if you look on the Flickr...
Was that a great sword?
It was okay. It was an okay sword. probably was a great
sword. Was it a bastard sword?
No.
It seemed very nice. I wouldn't have called it a bastard sword.
It was a reasonable sword. It
was
not sharpened or anything. It was a prop weapon. But if you picked it up and hit someone over the head with it, they would have hurt. It was a big club. But anyway, it looked really cool. And I got to the last round, and I did not win. I came very close, but someone stole the victory away from me at the last moment.
Snatched victory from you.
That's right. And... But if you look on the Flickr set, up on Flickr of my KublaCon 2007 pictures, you can see I took a picture of the guy who did win, and he's standing with it, and next to him, and it comes up to his head. And
there you go. So that random picture of a guy with a sword, that's the guy that stole the sword from your grasp.
That's right. I put a caption on it, so I said what it was. It's not just a random picture of a guy with a sword.
Guy with a sword. Take a look.
And so as my consolation prize, I won a little foam sword that says hero card on it.
I hope you have that hanging over your mantle.
It's in my office, actually. After Hero Card, after I learned about Hero Card, I went and had dinner with Chad Ellis from Your Move Games.
Ah, yes, the makers of Battlegrounds Fantasy Warfare.
Yes, I talked about him about that game and some other games they're coming out with, and we discussed that game in episode 9 of Roll 2D6. So
that we did.
Go out and play it. And he's a great guy. We might try to get him to have an interview with us or something.
That
in the
would
future.
Be great.
He
he's
did
just, he's
agree
a peach.
To do that.
He's great.
He's a cool guy. So then, after dinner, I went on to play my third
so
Old
you
West
have for
themed
dinner?
Game. Oh, what did I have for dinner? I had a...
Everyone's waiting to know. What did you have for dinner?
I had a smoked turkey panini with pesto sauce. It was very good.
Nice. I've had one of those from that particular deli that's right there. That's actually pretty good.
I know everyone wanted to hear that.
I'm glad you didn't stand in line for the frozen mini pizza and corn dog.
No, I did not get the little corn dog. I got
Gut Busters over there.
This is great radio, by the way.
It is, absolutely.
And then the panini, the way
so you
they
like
made it.
Like a good panini, is it?
Magnifique.
Mm. Magnifique.
I'm making that little kissing gesture
little,
with my,
yes,
my
little,
lips.
Right. That makes great radio. The
making gestures, you know, the listeners, they love that.
They do.
And I'm not going to describe the gesture Nate's making right now.
That's right. You ought not. We have delicate listeners.
So anyway, after dinner... I went on to play my third Old West themed game, and
Is
a game called Desperado. Now, I didn't plan to do all these Old West
games. I would call this desperate for Old West games rather than Desperado.
I was wanting to watch some Westerns by the end of the day.
You got to slow down there. Don't jump right into Westerns. You got to take it easy. Go with Westworld first, sort of a Western themed sci-fi. And then maybe Battle Beyond the Stars with George Peppard,
and then
you can slide into Westerns.
Then I'll go watch The Searchers.
And get one of the really old Westerns that has DeForest Kelly in it.
Oh, okay.
And so that also eases the way into the
that'll
Western
ease
movies.
My way in. Oh, everything's so unfamiliar. Oh, wait, there's McCoy.
There's McCoy.
I feel better now.
Ah, bones.
Okay, I'll put that on the list. So anyway, this is another miniatures game with Old West skirmish level fighting.
Very nice.
The guy running it, again, had dozens of painted Foundry Old West miniatures. Not as nicely painted as the Gamescape ones, I must say, but still a nice effort there. And we were each allowed to pick four of them for
A for effort, B for execution. The other guy had A for effort and A for execution. It's all right. There's no shame in a B.
I'm not going to rag on him. He's got more than I have.
I'm such a lousy painter. All my guys are just the blue man group. I can't paint anything, so I do appreciate a good painted miniature.
That's
so
right.
I,
he had clearly painted those, so that was good. So he allowed each of those to pick four of them for our gang. So he just put out all these miniatures, and we were asking, you know, oh, what weapons do these guys have? Which one do they have? And he's like, whatever you see the miniature has, that's what he has.
That's great. That's a great system for
so
balance.
Like the guy holding a rifle, he's got a rifle. The guy holding a six gun, he has a six gun. It's like if you see a woman there, and there's a couple, there's like a school marm and some other or a woman in a dress. If there's a woman, she has a derringer hidden under her dress. And she may be holding, like, the school marm had a shotgun, so
yes,
she had a shotgun.
She did. The school marm did have a shotgun in that one. I remember that.
There's a guy with a long coat. He has a derringer under the long coat. So.
Very nice.
So I picked four of them out, and he had set up a little town. He had some buildings, and he had a corral with cows in it, and he had a train.
And a train track and a train running through town.
And so he arbitrarily said, okay, you guys on that side of the table, you're the bandits trying to steal gold from the town. Everyone on this side of the table, you're the townspeople defending the town. So I was on the bandit side, and I decided I'm not trying to steal the gold, but I'm just trying to liberate it from the evil townspeople.
That's right. They're hoarding it.
They were hoarding it. I just wanted to spread the wealth.
That's right.
To myself.
To yourself. and the barkeep and the whores.
That's right.
Those are the people that deserve
down.
The money.
Trickle-down effect. the guy running, he had a bunch of buildings, had a stagecoach, had a model train. It made the game a lot of fun, very evocative.
Yeah.
In this game, you roll something like 3d6 to move your character, and it's a number of inches you move.
Right.
That's
at
a run.
It was freeform. There was no hexes or anything
like that.
No grid
or anything. Just
freeform
movement. You try to move from cover to cover, trying to shoot the other players, and it was kind of cool. You're dodging around the buildings. You're rolling, and it's a percentage chance to hit. And when you get hit, it was rolling one of those dice that has the six sides, it's like left arm, left leg, right arm, right leg, head, and torso.
Right.
And each of those had separate hit points also. You had like six hit points on each one. So if you get hit in the arm, as long as it was your left arm, you were still okay to fight.
You're still okay to fire your right-handed gun.
That's
or whatever.
Right. Because everyone's right-handed in the Old West.
There were no sinister people in the Old West.
Apparently
that's
not.
That's a well-documented fact.
But if you got hit in the head, unless it was like a one-point hit, which means it just grazed your ear, you were pretty much dead.
Yeah. Not many hit points to the skull.
Yes, and if you got hit in the gut, I think you could survive, but you were bleeding to death, and you would not survive many more turns.
Wow. So you're saying it was a fairly deadly game.
But it was, if you get hit with a gun, you're...
Well, I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying that that's
there are some
games where people just keep taking a beating and keep on going.
No, but it was cinematic deadly in that, if you're the hero, you can get hit in the arm and keep fighting for the whole rest of the movie.
Right. But then for some reason you get hit in some undisclosed location and you fall down out of the second story window and roll over the awning and into the water trough.
That's right. But if you get hit in the gut, you're not dead immediately.
Right.
You still have enough strength to get your gun and shoot the guy who shot you.
That's right. Oh, there you go. There you go. Very cinematic. I appreciate a good cinematic game.
And so in what I'll deem the most creative play of the game by me.
Yes.
I'm very humble in my
creativity. I don't think anybody else mentioned it, but you did, and so we'll go with that.
So I decided to create some chaos in the town, and one of my bandits snuck into the corral, and he decided to fire his guns in the air in an attempt to stampede the cattle and create some chaos.
That's
so
awesome.
So I said this to the GM. I'm like, hey, I'm going to shoot my guns in the air and stampede the cattle. Can I do that? And he thinks for a second. He's like, sure, I think there's rules for that.
Rules
book. So yeah, here it is, under animals. All right.
Cattle stampede.
They move this number of inches. Okay, they're going to turn a random direction each turn. All right. They went, they crashed through the fence, they went into the main street of the town, and ran over one of the guys in the town, so it was
That's
great.
That's great. A well-used bullet. And that
That's
bullet
right
there did more damage to him via cattle than it would have otherwise.
And one interesting aspect of this game was the initiative system. Which we'll say he could have done a little bit differently in this game. But in the original rules of the game, you deal out a secret card out of a deck to everyone who's playing.
So everyone
and
has a handful of cards.
Each character has a card, yeah.
And they're playing cards.
Playing cards.
These are, your standard...
You could use tarot cards, sure. use your Sobek deck.
I've got a four of staves.
It's a little different feel, but... but yes, you use a deck of cards.
That would be a Wild West, with undead.
Deadlands system or something like that. So you deal out cards, and you have these cards. You're supposed to hold them secret, and then in another deck you have the identical cards that were dealt out, and you shuffle those each turn and deal them out. And when your card comes up, you can either move your guy then and reveal to everyone that's your card, or you can keep it secret, and then at the end. Everyone moves who didn't
then you
move.
Just play. Then you just play your card.
Yeah, or you skip
say,
your you skip
you
your
skip
move
your
for
turn,
that
you
turn.
Wait to see what someone else is doing.
But he just said, okay, it's all public, we're just gonna go. And since everyone had four characters, I think it would have been a lot easier if he just said, okay, you have all the threes, you have all the fours, you have all the fives.
Right.
And then
everyone
when he drew one.
Right.
Instead of pulling up, okay, five of spades, and then everyone shuffles through their character sheets to see who has the five of spades.
Five. Yeah. It could have been optimized. For this particular game, because he wasn't doing the secret turns and he was doing it public, he should have just given everybody a number. And because you all had four guys, you could have one of every suit, your number fours whenever that comes up. But again, he could have done it. he could have done that particular bit a bit smoother, because in watching this, there was more time wasted of everybody looking through their character sheets trying to figure out which card each one was.
I know.
Before he did that. And he could have cut the amount of time in the game down by at least a fifth by doing that.
But anyway, it was still pretty fun. We were moving around. We were shooting at each other. One of the townspeople, there was a stagecoach parked in front of the saloon, and they decided to jump in the stagecoach. A bunch of guys got in there, and they turned it into a war wagon. And
awesome.
They were rolling through town, just shooting out the windows and trying to shoot at everyone. And it was pretty cool.
Who wouldn't?
So that was fun. The last game of the Saturday night was run by the exact same guy, and it was Circus Imperium. And this is a crazy game of a futuristic chariot race, sort of a la Ben-Hur.
Without the deaths. With the deaths.
But this is futuristic, and you have hover chariots and mutated lions that
mutated
are pulling your chariots.
Lions. That to me, I thought was an interesting game design decision. Why, you know, if you know, normally horses, yes, in the future. Jets, yes,
sure.
In the future. Pods for, like, pod racing,
right.
You know, in the future, yes. Mutated lions?
Wouldn't have thought of that, huh?
No, that came out of left field. I'm not saying it's a bad choice. I'm just saying that it came out of left field for me. I looked at the miniatures. I'm like, wow, they're all like funky, weird lions with spines on them. All right, okay.
So you have a sheet which shows the damage to your chariot and to your beasts. And you can whip your beasts to make them move faster. But if you do, you draw a whip card, I believe it was. And then there's a chance you can send your beasts into a frenzy. And
in which
this
case,
is
you don't
a
control your movement anymore.
Yes, they start moving really, really fast, and this becomes bad when you are going around those sharp turns, because you really need to slow down at the end of those turns.
Right. It's sort of like Formula Day in that way.
That's right.
You need to make sure you go slow around the turns, or you'll careen off and smash into the wall.
Yeah, and it looks pretty simple to get into the rules that we played, but there's a whole ton of add-on rules for extra carnage. You can let the characters have the charioteers have weapons, and they can
carry a gladiator with them also in the back to fight against.
Yeah, to jump onto the next guy's chariot and fight there, or you can attack the other guy's beasts and things like that.
Very nice.
And the guy running it, he had a whole bunch of nicely painted miniature hover chariots and beasts, and they were all different colors, and so it was really cool. You can be like, okay, who's the guy with the purple and yellow chariot? You're moving next.
Right.
And he had a big oversized board that he had brought, so that was great.
Yeah. Now, I mean, honestly, the gameplay on that particular game itself was a little meh. You know, it was just sort of there. I mean, it wasn't a great game. It was an exciting mechanic. It was just sort of there. It depended heavily on all the cards. You know, you can't reproduce it without all the cards because it's like totally
card-driven. Yes, all the whip cards and the cornering cards.
The whip cards and cornering cards are
You could replace those with a table.
A table of some kind. Yeah, that's true. You could do that. But I think really what made his presentation and the fact that those miniatures looked really awesome, it was one of the things that I think were great.
Once again, taking a game with counters and replacing it with miniatures
makes it
impresses people like me.
That's your demographic.
Impresses
men
my
like
demo.
You that are you.
That's right. That's my demo. That's what the focus group said.
That's right.
So that was the last game I played of the night, and I had to leave before it was done, before it was getting too late for me. And
that night, watched a bunch of really cool movies.
Yeah, if you wanted to talk about the movies you watched.
Oh, it's
there.
just really brief. Yeah,
yeah, sure.
I don't know if you guys know about Dungeon Majesty. Dungeon Majesty is a sort of a public access cable show and also an online web television show. And it's four hot chicks playing D&D with sort of a kind of cool but a little bit, you know, whacked out games master. And the cool thing about it is they have parts of them sitting around the table playing D&D, rolling dice in this adventure, and then it cuts to cutscenes of them dressed up as their characters going through these blue-screened, you know, dungeons or whatnot. And so the Dungeon Majesty people were there, and they were showing some of their movies, and they showed some other things that they'd put together that weren't Dungeon Majesty episodes. And I got to meet the Dungeon Majesty, the hot chicks, and the kind of weird guy. And they're really cool, and they're really awesome guys. And they are just all across the board. They were just sweet. They were peaches. And it was fun to talk to them, and it was fun to see some of their work. And then after that, they played. After the Dungeon Majesty people left to go actually play some games at the con. There was a showing of The Gamers. I'm not sure. I don't remember
the name
of it.
It's called The Gamers.
The Gamers is the name of the movie, which was really funny.
It was the kind of thing that we wished we had thought of when we were in high school and had access to video equipment.
Exactly. Exactly it. It's exactly what we would have, should have, could have done.
I know.
Had we had video technology been within our grasp in that era. But it was a lot of fun, and it played on a lot of it's funny because it's true sort of moments out of living a gamer's life and a role-playing game life, and specifically a role-playing D&D life. And yes. It was well worth the watch. I had a number of laugh-out-loud moments, a couple of groaners, but other than that, it was really
yep.
good.
So if you like D&D humor, check it out.
There you go.
And we'll put a link to their website.
Yes.
Let's see. So the next morning, that was Saturday night, so this is Sunday morning. Got in early and to play Ship of the Line, and this is a game of Napoleonic era naval warfare.
I am so
I know,
jealous.
You, after you read that whole Master and Commander.
I know, I read all the Master and Commanders. This is just like totally up my alley. I wanted to make a game like this, but I haven't gotten around to it. So I'll set up for playing it with really cool figures, little minis.
Yeah, the same guy who had brought these Circus Imperium minis had brought box after box of these very nice ship miniatures, which he had made. They were all painted. They were rigged. They had little bits of string going around them for the
awesome.
Rigging.
That rigging.
And, there was, of course, someone who said, "Oh, how did you do this rigging?" And he said, very carefully.
Very carefully, with glue and string.
Yes, and only one of them got broken during the game. So
wow.
That was pretty good. But
if I would have been there with my meat fists, I would have broken them all, so I'm kind of glad.
Nate Smash! anyway, if you could look at my pictures... And you'll see just how many ships he had. There was quite a few. There was a ton of players for this game. I don't know, like 12 players or something. So instead of playing out a specific scenario, he just said, we're just going to do this big battle royale, and each player is going to control 3 ships.
Oh, wow.
It's not any historical comments. Just like, let's see what would happen if, each of 12 nations had sent 3 ships into battle.
3 ships into battle.
And so I had the Spanish ships, and there was another guy who was also Spanish, so we hooked up together. I had 3 Spanish ships. I had 2 large ships, Ship of the Line, with one of them with, I think, 112 guns, and the other had 144 guns.
That's a ship.
And then I had
probably
a little...
Probably got a 40-pound bow chaser on it, too. Oh, something nice.
And then I had another little ship frigate with 40 guns. Uh-huh. This is my little... And that one sank really fast. But
that's right.
The ships are all described. Yeah, that's right. And the ships are all described by how many guns they are.
Yes.
No one cares who's on board or how many tons it is. It's like, what's that? Oh, that's a 120 gun ship. Okay.
Right. Well, that
and that's what they did
fair,
at the time, right?
Yeah, that's what they did at the time. And to be fair, in order to hold 120 guns worth of iron, you had to have a certain size of a ship to do it.
That implied a certain tonnage.
It implied a certain size.
It implied
the
size of the crew.
Which would imply the size of the crew and the size of the and size and the shape of the sails and that sort of thing. So just by listing the number of guns, you get a rough estimate of what the ship is like.
Kind of. So you're designing the ship around the amount of guns you wanted it to have at that time.
Like the HMS Victory. Like,
so we had also. For each ship, you rolled randomly to see what kind of crew you had. You could have like a conscript crew or a green crew or a average crew or an elite crew.
Nice.
And I had one ship. My big ship was an elite crew. My other two were like conscripts. They were just right out of prison and right onto the ship.
All right.
And then I was facing up against a bunch of the British ships, and they all, of course, have elite crews.
Yes, they were the monarchs of the sea for
the
Napoleonic era.
So the British ships were the ones that started out near me on this battle royale, so we decided to go and try to take out some of the British ships.
Bad
move. And we did some damage, I managed to get a few broadsides out there.
You got to bloody a nose,
that's
blacken
right.
an eye before you go down.
Killed a few guys. And as we were playing, you take this 144 guns. You're not rolling 144 dice. These are sort of simplified.
Yes.
And on your ship, I had 6 gun boxes on my ship, and so I rolled on the 6 table.
Right.
6 on each of the 4 corners of the ship.
Right.
And then my little one had like 1.
Right.
I guess it's like 40 guns is one gun.
So these would be volleys, as it were. These would be the number of things that could all fire at the same time.
Exactly. And that was your big guns. You also then had cannonades, which were really short ones. And then if you were within a certain range, if you were within 6 inches of them, instead of firing regular shot, you could do chain shot, which would do extra damage and try to take out their sails and things like that. And so as we were fighting, we were taking damage, and when you take damage in this, it would say something like, okay, you take one hull and one sale and one of something else. Right. And the guy who was running is like, oh, you know, when it says something else, you should just mark off your Marines. You're not going to use this in this game. They're okay. Just there to be a damage sink.
Damage sinks.
That's right. So, okay, sure, I mark off a Marine box instead of a hull or a gun or something.
Right.
And then near the end of the game, I did end up ramming my ship into a British ship. And at the end, the British elite Marines then overwhelmed my crew.
Yeah. They come in and start biting off heads.
And, that's right. And it didn't help that my crew was all conscripts also.
Yes, they were more than willing to give up. And
yeah, so, and they were all wiped up. Yes. But it was a fun game. I don't think I would have liked it as much without these really cool little miniature ships that he had there.
Yeah, yeah.
But it looks really cool anyway. And he had blue felt on the table, of course.
Very nice.
I tried to look this game up on BoardGameGeek to get a link to it, but it's not listed there at all.
No ship of the line on BoardGameGeek.
Not there at all. I looked at the rulebook while I was there. It was a very old game, published in 1976 by Ballantine Games. I made a note of that.
1976. Good luck in finding that one.
It's long out of print, and apparently no one
except this guy. I wish he could have got his business card.
He and his other friend play it all the time, apparently. And
that's what he's been playing since 1976.
And I think that's for sure.
He's a graybeard, isn't he?
He was indeed a graybeard.
There you go. I know these guys.
His friend.
These guys are awesome, but man.
He's there with his two kids who he had brought up on this game.
26 years old.
That's right. The combat system was pretty arcane. It relied on a giant lookup table that you used based on the amount of guns power that you had, which was based on your distance and your crew skill and all that.
Right.
And then you'd roll two six-sided dice in D66 mode, which is something I always enjoy seeing.
Yes.
And that's where you
it's
roll...
It's not common.
That's not
it's
common. Not that's common. Where you roll two six-sided dice of different colors, and you say, this one is the 10s, and this one is the 1s. Right. And it lets you get 36 results on a lookup table.
Right.
And you use it to see if you damage their hull, guns, crew, sails, rudder, or other things. And you also had to count with the wind direction, which he said at the beginning of the game, it didn't change during the game. But you just had to look, and if you couldn't go right into the wind, you know, you wanted to be at an angle for maximum speed and all this stuff.
You had to tack.
You had to tack, exactly. Yeah. Nate knows now the minutiae of tacking after listening to the whole Master and Commander series.
That's right. That's right. I could be on the quarterdeck commanding it. No, not even close.
But it was a fun game. And then I enjoyed it. So after this, I wandered around for a while. I took a bunch of pics of some other miniatures games, which you'll see as you look on my Flickr photo set.
Yes.
There was one game, and I wish I had made a note of what game it was. I think it was some form of squad leader or advanced squad leader. Uh-huh. I'm not sure. But it had tiny, tiny miniatures, and it was a World War II game.
5mm ones?
They were 5mm miniatures. I asked the guy about it. And I was like, wow, those are really tiny. And he's like, yeah, they're really easy to paint when they're that small.
That's right.
And this, again, goes against what I would intuitively think. We talked about this before when I was talking about the 15mm miniatures.
Right.
And I was like, oh, those must be hard to paint. And some guy who does those wrote into us and is like, no, actually, they're so much easier because there's less detail.
Right.
And it's true. And the guy with this, with the 5mm, is like, yeah, you just need two colors on these, a base color and then a highlight color. And
there
like,
you
oh,
go.
Okay. Makes sense when you think about it.
That's right. You just a blop of base paint and one little highlight and you're done.
So after that, I did a tournament of Hero Card Rise of the Shogun. So instead
Which
of talking about that
about
now, I'll we'll go into more detail on the Hero Card podcast.
Yes.
Really cool metal sword, which again, I will regret not winning. So then, late that night, and it was my last game of the night, there was a new game called High School Drama. And this is another game that I did end up buying. And,
it's from Shifting Skies Games.
Shifting Skies Games. That's right. A new game company. The game designer was there.
Excellent. And I love meeting the game designers of the new games because they're always so excited. They want to show you their baby.
That's right.
And they know it inside and out. And so they're actually pretty cool about. They know all the edge cases.
Oh yeah.
And they know everything. I love meeting the game designers at the cons.
It is. And he was a nice guy. His name is Bojan Radakovic was his name.
Radakovic.
Probably pronouncing that wrong right there.
Probably. What is it? Yes, Bojan Radakovic. No,
he didn't,
I don't know
he didn't have a Russian
Radakovic.
Accent or anything.
Oh, but come on, it's Radakovic.
Radakovic, right. Radakovic, I don't know.
Radakovic, whatever.
Radakovic.
High School Drama is the name of the game. Shifting Skies Games is the name of the company.
Thanks for kicking it back into high gear.
Kick it back.
I played in a mini tournament of this game as well, and it was really fun. I did buy this game, like I said. It's a light card-based game, about similar to Shea Geek right. in terms of complexity and humor. And this is all about high school students becoming friends or romantically attached, and then backstabbing and drama and gossip and trying to battle rival cliques.
Wow, all the drama of high school replayed in a comedic and distancing way. So all that pain and heartache that you went through in high school, you can now look at a distance on the table,
That's right.
It all out, and laugh at it. I love that.
That's right. And so there's these
therapy, but cheaper.
That's right. And, you know, and I'll play this with you afterwards. We can work out some of these issues.
That's right. I've got to be the Games Master character. I'm the Games Master guy. That was me.
There's a bunch of cards representing various high school character archetypes. There's the varsity quarterback, the head cheerleader, the lovable dork.
Well, not the lovable dork, the head cheerleader.
Lovable dork. There's the game master, there's the photo nerd, there's the goth chick, there's the overachiever, the drum major, the sensitive jock. There's a whole bunch of these.
Oh, the sensitive jock. Fodder of great high school teen movies everywhere.
And then you have different events they go to and different clubs they join, and you try to break up the other cliques. It's a lot of fun. And
you
I thought
break
my
up
wife...
other people's friendships while solidifying your own.
That's
that.
Right. I thought my
Machiavellian.
Wife thought my wife might like this the way she liked Shea Geek, and in fact I was right, she does like it, and we've played it a bunch of times.
That's great.
And the fun thing about it is that you make up the whole story of the students as the game goes along, and just act as if you're watching the Breakfast Club or Pretty in Pink or some other high school movie of the 80s.
Well, there you go. Or the 2000s. It could be American Pie.
No, nothing after 1989.
No, okay.
As a cutoff date.
All right.
No, actually that would be fine. So that was the last game I played on Sunday. And then, let's see, then the next...
Monday is still like a half day at KubaCon.
Monday was the half day, that's right. Not very many people there, but there were still some games there. I went in there, and I was there that morning for a three-game Ticket to Ride tournament.
Yeah, I played that one last year. I went to the three-game tournament last
year. Oh, yes,
you
did it last year. How did you do last year?
I did incredibly poorly. There were so many people that were so much better than me. Well, but the way they did it is you played all three, and I suppose they did it this way this year.
That's right.
You played all three of the games, and you kept your score, and you added up your score from game to game to game.
Exactly.
And then that's how they do the standings, is the total score. So if you did if you didn't win
in theory, you could mess up on one game as long as you did well on the others.
Right.
But in actuality, you need to win all three of them because there's some other experts who have done all three.
Exactly. And I did just incredibly poorly, but I fell in love with the game then. And well, actually, both of them. I liked both Ticket to Ride and Ticket to Ride Europe. And we ran out of time, and they kicked us out of the ballroom before I could do Ticket to Ride Marklin.
Oh yes, I did get to play all three of those. Ticket to Ride Marklin first, which I think is
most
complex.
You know, actually, now that I think about it, they didn't kick us out. I had to leave because it had gone over. Our games had gone over that I had to leave, and so I was so behind from both of them. I knew there was no way that I was going to come back with a stirring 10,000-point victory to finish in the top 10 people. So I just figured, okay, I'm done.
Well, I did get to play all three. I played Marklin
first. But you got to play Marklin first.
That's the most complex.
It is.
Apparently. And then Europe second, and then the U.S. one second, and then Europe last.
Okay.
And, I had only played the U.S. one before, which, it's a fun game, the others are also fun. They're different strategy, and there's different things you can do, like in Marklin, you know, you have the passengers, which move around the board, and that's a different strategic option, and you have the tunnels in Europe.
Yes.
I did not do very well in the tournament. Everyone else there was really big Ticket to Ride players.
Yes.
I think I came in either third or fourth in all three of the games that I played.
Wow, you did amazing. I think I came in eighth, and we only had six people playing. I'm not sure how that worked out, but the empty chair next to me scored better than I did.
You got in the negative then.
I did. I'm not sure how that happened.
Because you can get negative if you have...
You can. You have big long routes and you don't score enough. You bet.
But I had four players in every game, and it was the same four players. We stayed together in each of the three things. So I got to talk with these people, and they were all pretty nice.
You have to spend 8 hours with these people.
It was 6 hours.
Yeah, it was six.
Hours, yeah. So I'll say one interesting thing that happened in the Ticket to Ride Europe game. And in that game, you have two different types of routes. You have long routes and short routes.
Yeah.
And at the beginning of the game, you get one long route and you get a number of short routes. and that's the only long route you're ever going to get. And throughout the rest of the game, you can draw extra routes, but they're always short routes.
Okay.
So, and you have this one long route, which is a huge long, it's a lot of points. You really have to finish that long route, because
yes.
everyone else is going to do it, and if you don't, you're screwed.
You're toast. Yes.
So we get to the end of the game. Everyone's counting up their points. One guy's counting up his points. He puts his cards out, and we looked at his routes, and it turned out that he had missed his long route by one city accidentally.
Oh, he stopped too early.
He had gone all the way across from Stockholm to Turkey or something like that,
right.
and stopped one city away. And it's just one of those things
That's
where
just...
if you're not familiar with European geography, it's not immediately obvious to you that you didn't make it. So.
Right.
And this was something like a 21-point route, so instead it turned into negative 21 points.
Ouch,
and I think that's the game that I came in third place in.
Hey, all right, good job.
Due to that, and he's like, can we go
Strangely
back four
enough,
turns?
He was still second. No, what did you say?
And then he's like, can we go back four turns?
Yeah, just come back. We'll redo. Can I do a redo four turns ago?
Yeah.
That's
but anyway, it's fun. I like all the Ticket to Ride games. I think I like the Europe one best. I think it has the right amount of complexity for me. I'd have to play the Marklin one a number of more times before I really grok what's going on in that game.
Yes. I watched some people play it for a little bit. I watched the first five minutes or so,
mm-hmm.
and I saw the passengers and how it worked. And I was interested to play. I just didn't have the opportunity.
Yeah, it does give you some different strategic options there. And that's it. I had a great time at KubliCon this year, and I can't wait to go again next year.
Oh, yeah.
I want to give a shout-out to the three Roll2D6 listeners I met there. Bay, who we mentioned before, David, and Kent.
Oh, sweet. We've got three listeners.
I know. We've tripled from last year.
And somebody besides my mom listens. Sweet.
I know your mom loved that detailed description of Champion's Powers.
That's right.
And playing all these great miniatures games we did this year, it really made me want to go out and paint some miniatures again. So like I said, I did in fact go out and get a few minis and some brushes and paints, and I'm going to give it a try again.
Yeah, I've seen them sitting on your desk. I know that you have not only the will, but you've put your money where your mouth is, and you're
That's right.
going to be painting minis, and we're going to be playing some great miniatures-based games in the near future.
I certainly hope so. I haven't painted any minis since high school when I painted that whole Blood Bowl team.
Yes.
And I think you did a Blood Bowl team.
I did. Elves on Ice.
Elves on Ice. Mine was called Brocky and Ultra Cricket.
That's right. Yeah,
it was
yeah.
a Chaos Humans team.
That's right.
That was great. They were actually just regular Games Workshop Chaos Humans from Fantasy Miniatures.
Right.
And so all the guys, they had big spiky armor and a guy holding his fist out with a sword, and I just took my little clippers and
cut the sword off.
So just the guy holding his fist out.
That's right.
Holding
Instead
the pommel
of brass
of
knuckles or a pommel. Yeah, yeah. But it was fun, and you had a lot of fun painting them.
It was fun. I did.
You painted a bunch of mechs after that. You painted some of my mechs.
I did. I did some BattleTech mechs after that. That was kind of fun. We had some plastic mech miniatures. Those were cool.
Yeah, but we digress. So this is all in preparation for more miniatures gaming, so we can have some more fun at KubliCon next year.
That's right. So hopefully we will see all of you there next year. Come out to...
if not all of you, maybe all three of you.
Come out to Burlingame, and we'll see you there next Memorial Day, 2008.
2008. Generic outro, take one.
Ooh. You're going to edit that out, right?
Yeah, we're going to edit this all out.
Okay. Hey, that's another episode of Roll2D6, and thanks for listening.
Boy, we sure had fun talking about that game or games we talked about.
I just love playing it and them, and I think it's going to be one of my favorites.
Yeah, we and or the guests sure did entertain and educate.
We sure did. Look for a link to more information about it in the show notes. Hey, next time we get together, let's play that game or games.
It's a deal. I'll bring the pretzels. You bring the Mountain Dew.
All right. Hey, in the meantime, you can leave comments and see show notes on roll2d6.com or send us email at roll2d6@gmail.com.
Yes, be sure to tune in next time when you may hear Adam
or Nate
say...
Sir, you acknowledge that you are talking to a chaotic neutral 8th-level half-elf ranger illusionist, and you treat me with that respect! I did not sow these